Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Eating right in a way that both fosters longevity and good health, and also vitality in that longevity, is a technical proposition. Scientists study foods for such values. How can then mere mortals translate that science onto the dining room table is what chef and nutritionist Rebecca Katz has taken on in her new cookbook, co-written with Matt Edelson. The name of the cookbook is The Longevity Kitchen, satisfying big flavor recipes featuring the top 16 age-busting power foods. Rebecca is with us today by phone from San Francisco. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thanks for having me, Anne. Delighted to be here with you this morning.
In the title, the phrase age-busting almost sounds snake oily or campy these days. Tell us about the science that has emerged to give credence to that boast.
Well, since probably, I mean, the beginning of this century, more than 250,000 scientific studies, peer-reviewed studies, have been done on food. And their health-promoting properties. And that's really quite remarkable. I mean, it's basically scientific studies are telling us in many ways what the wisdom of our elders have been putting into action for thousands and thousands of years. So when your great-grandmother said, eat this, it's good for you, now we can go and look at, you know, unbelievable amounts of studies to show just how a food works to be, quote-unquote, so good for you.
So let's take an example of something, maybe chicken noodle soup or an apple a day or something like that, that has been studied and shown to have the health benefits that Grandma said it would.
Okay, well, let's talk about the apple first.
Okay.
Okay, because, I love that saying, an apple mm-hmm. a day keeps the doctor away, and it's actually true. In some ways, apples are like their own little medicine cabinets. They are particularly good for reducing risk of cancer. They are anti-inflammatory. They're good for bone health. They're good for cardiovascular health. They help in digestion. And they've been shown to reduce levels of what's called a C-reactive protein, which in layman's terms means that if you have a lot of inflammation going on in your body, you may have a marker that's high in C-reactive protein, which is related to heart disease. And apples have a lot of pectin, which soothes the stomach. And grandmothers have been known to give a little bit of brown apple to you or to me or whatever when you have an upset tummy, and that's really why. So there's a mixture of antioxidants that protect against the development of certain cancers, including lung cancers, and there are promising studies in Germany that found that the acid in apples inhibited the development of colon cancer tumors, and Italian researchers noted that apple extract appeared in animals to protect against stomach damage normally caused by aspirin. So that's a lot of scientific gobbledygook. Okay, I mean, it's real, it's science, but I could sit here for an hour with you and break down sort of, okay, what is C-reactive protein? What are antioxidants? What are all those things? The bottom line is that science shows us that apples are good for us. And that's something, and I look at that science as a chef and a nutritionist and a culinary translator, and I go, wow, isn't this really cool? Apples are really good for us. Now, how do I get people to eat them?
My guest is Rebecca Katz. She's the author of a new book. It's called The Longevity Kitchen, Satisfying Big Flavor Recipes Featuring the Top 16 Age-Busting Power Foods. If you have a question or comment for Rebecca, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Okay, so now what about chicken soup?
Okay, well, broth. I mean, we're going back now to centuries since the cauldron. Chicken soup has a tremendous amount of healing properties in it. Any kind of really good broth has a way of going into the cells and waking them up. It's like a wake-up call. And chicken soup has collagen in it, which is really good for our bones. But it's particularly, there's something about chicken soup. It's been studied by doctors, in the lab, that opens up the sinuses. And but I would say, from my research in broth, that there is something very healing and soothing about a broth because there are a lot of minerals. And there's a lot of magnesium and potassium and B vitamins and things that are easily digestible in a broth. And it's almost like taking your body to an internal spa. It's like broth goes in and wakes up the cells and says, hi, we're here. And there's a lot of, depending on what you put in your chicken soup, if you put garlic in your chicken soup, there's going to be a lot of antiviral, antibacterial properties in that soup. So broths are really potent and powerful when it comes to making us feel better.
You have a recipe in your book, an old favorite. You've used it in other cookbooks, the Magic Mineral Broth 2.0. And it's got a lot of ingredients, and I would imagine, to one extent or another, people can, what depends on what they have on hand. But a lot of them, like you say, 2 unpeeled yellow onions, 6 unpeeled, everything's unpeeled except for maybe the leeks and some other things. But you like things unpeeled. What's the benefit of that?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of, there's benefits, for example. First of all, time would be one benefit. You don't have to peel these vegetables.
Oh, yay. Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
So this broth is about chop and throw. And this particular broth has a lot of history in it. I started working on this broth in 2003 for my first book, One Bite at a Time. And it took me about 65 gallons, scores of attempts, and a full rotation of the earth around the sun before I came up with this broth. And this broth is, as I said, there's a lot of ingredients in it. Looks like a lot of ingredients, but literally it will take you about 10 minutes to chop and throw it in the pot and then put it on the stove and let it simmer. And people call it the miracle broth, love soup. People say it gives them a soup buzz. People will say, oh my gosh, it's so calming. Oh my gosh, my son who had mono, I gave the broth to them for like a week and, his mono went away. I think it's the same theory. There's a tremendous amount of trace minerals in a broth that are easily absorbed by the body.
It tastes good.
Oh my gosh! Yes, and you know what's so funny? It's like aromatherapy in the kitchen. This broth is simmering on the stove, and it's like, your nose is just wow. So yeah, it's quite an intoxicating, healing, and tasty little tonic.
Once again, the number to call is 614-292-8513 to speak to my guest, Rebecca Katz, co-author of The Longevity Kitchen. Linda in Gahanna, you're on the air. Welcome, Linda.
Hi, good morning. You were extolling the virtues of the apple, and my question is, can you get good apples in the store? Do they have too many pesticides or, you know, contaminants, or should I look for organic apples, or what's your idea?
Well, you do talk about organic pretty specifically in the
book. I do. The best way to think about organic is to look at the Environmental Working Group, EWG.org, and they have a list of what's called the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. So when we're talking about apples, they are unfortunately they're on the Dirty Dozen list. So apples are one of those foods that if you eat regularly, should be bought organically. And if your store does not carry organic apples, this is my advice. I would go to the produce manager and I would make a stand. I'd take a stand because they are readily available organically. So there's no reason why stores should not carry something as basic as an apple organically. So, yes, that would be a food that I would eat organically.
And when you talk about the Dirty Dozen, these are fruits and vegetables that have there are a lot of problems with them if they're not organic.
Yes.
Okay. Because not always organic, you know, we've had different shows. Organic isn't always that much better.
No.
And I was going to ask you about that, as long as we brought up the organic issue. You say it does matter. You write about it extensively. It is expensive. If for some families it's a matter of eating more vegetables or eating fewer but eating organic, what do you say to that? You got a mom with three kids. She wants to buy a big bag of apples every week. To do it organically is four times as expensive as not, or more.
You know, I think you have to pick and choose. Again, if apples are going to be like a mainstay, they may be a place where you're going to spend a little money versus, for example, you're not going to buy, you don't need to buy cabbage. You don't need to buy avocados. You don't need to buy peas. You don't need to buy cantaloupe, domestic cantaloupe or asparagus or onions or corn or sweet potatoes organically.
Okay.
Okay. So the idea is not, oh, well, I have to eat totally organic, because it's true. It's expensive and it's not necessarily practical. But I would say that if you are going to feed your kids something on a daily basis, then maybe you want to make that choice.
Okay. My guest once again, Rebecca Katz, author of The Longevity Kitchen. She'll still be with us when we return, and we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about eating right in a way that fosters longevity and good health and vitality in that longevity with Rebecca Katz. She co-wrote a new cookbook. It's called The Longevity Kitchen, Satisfying Big Flavor Recipes Featuring the Top 16 Age-Busting Power Foods. Before we get into those 16 age-busting power foods, I wanted to ask you about your co-author, Matt Edelson, and why it was important. He's a science, health, and sports writer.
Yes. Well, Matt and I, this is our third book child together.
Okay.
And Matt Edelson is, I'm so glad you asked about Matt, because he has an uncanny ability to take all this dense science and write about it and digest it and then write about it in like these digestible, tasty, readable morsels. I mean, and as I said, this is our third book together, and I, you know, we sit and collaborate in just a remarkable way. But he really has the ability to tell a story, especially about as something as nutrient dense. I mean, as nutrient dense, meaning scientifically dense material in a fun and understandable way. And yes, he's quite a hybrid, but the
yeah.
You know, because I've known Matt now for 16 years, and I mean, he's edited and looked at every single thing I've written, including my essay to culinary school. So he has an amazing ability to tell a story, whether it's, you know, covering Cal Ripken in the day. He's sort of like the Studs Terkel of medical journalism. He's quite remarkable.
Well, you must like working together because you couldn't live farther apart.
Well,
he's in Maryland, you're in San Francisco, California.
Yeah, and we work together. It is quite remarkable how we work together 3,000 miles away.
Sean and Hilliard, you're on the air with Rebecca Katz. Welcome.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Good morning.
Good morning. I've been cooking now for many, many years, about 15 years on and off professionally, and I have my own garden in my backyard about 4 years now. So I'm into eating healthy. I force my family to eat healthy. My question was, I have been hearing about wheatgrass and barley grass, and I was thinking about getting into maybe growing that and buying a juicer. I was just wondering if you could kind of enlighten me a little bit more on the wheatgrass and barley grass.
You know, I'm not a big expert on juicing and wheatgrass and barley grass, because I'm not a big juicer. But if you're going to juice with wheatgrass and barley grass, I can tell you this. You want to make sure that when you take a slug of wheatgrass juice, that you do it on an empty stomach. And that you wait 30 minutes before you eat, because it's quite powerful stuff. And I've known people to do a big glass of it and then just feel like, you know, it's like too much.
I heard that you're only supposed to take like 2 to 3 ounce shots a day.
That's it. That's all
you need. I've had it a couple times. I used to live in Las Vegas, and that's kind of where I got introduced into it. And I took it for a couple weeks, but recently I just been hearing a lot about this barley grass, and it has other properties that the wheatgrass doesn't. And I heard the properties overall for both of them are just tremendous. But I've never heard about not taking it on a empty stomach or a full stomach or whatever.
Well, empty stomach, and let it do its thing. Because when you mix it with food, it just upsets your stomach. So 30 minutes between the time you take a shot and before you eat.
Thank you, Sean. Yeah, thanks, Sean, for that call. We appreciate it. 614-292-8513. If you'd like to make a call, you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And you can check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Let's talk about another element of the title, the Super 16 Foods. In the book, you list them in alphabetical order, so it starts with asparagus. And I like every single thing on the 16. Some of it I can't have, but I was surprised at one of them. If I could just jump in right off the bat and say coffee?
Ha! I know. Everybody, I'm not going to give away the other food that people are shocked about, but yeah, coffee. And really, one of the reasons why, and I have to, before I go into it, I want to say that the top 16 foods, as you mentioned, some of them they're not going to be everybody's top 16 foods, because some people, you know, either may not like them or
allergies
or whatever. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about coffee and its benefits, because I will say that if you are sensitive to caffeine and coffee is not your thing, it's not like I would say, oh, go ahead and start drinking it just because it's, you know, I deemed it a top 16 mm-hmm. power food. But if you're a coffee drinker, what you should know is that I'm talking about coffee that is black. I'm not talking about the, you know, double latte with the three shots of caramel syrup and, you know, a ton of, right. So black coffee, I'm going to say fair trade. I'm not talking about, you know, Taster's Choice instant freeze-dried coffee, which is what, you know, my father used to drink with two tablespoons of coffee neat in it. But coffee is loaded with antioxidants, which protect against free radical damage. And I'm going to explain about antioxidants and free radicals in a minute. But it also has a way of focusing us. And basically, it improves our cognitive function, especially in the morning, because what it does is it wakes up the dopamine receptor, which is a neurotransmitter in the brain that says, focus, 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 focus. And it's also about pleasure. So coffee makes it because of, you know, its tremendous antioxidant profile and our ability to focus us. So if you are a coffee drinker, then you can feel really good about it.
Let's get to Catherine in Columbus real quick. Catherine, you're on the air with Rebecca Katz. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, I know you addressed the organic issue, and which is my understanding that food's grown without pesticides, but I'm wondering what your author thinks about GMOs, the genetically modified organisms, and how that comes into play with your health.
Well, that is a great question. And we could spend hours talking about GMOs. Genetically modified organisms. I think it is a it's not nice to fool with Mother Nature. That's what I'm going to say. I mean, it's a difficult landscape in terms of navigating foods that are GMOs and foods that are not GMOs in this country. I think there's no mistake that other countries are very adamant about labeling genetically modified foods so that the consumer can make a choice. And we don't have that choice in this country. And I think it's very unfortunate because our bodies have different ways of expressing how they react to certain foods. And I think one of the foods that we can point to that people seem to be having problems with more and more is gluten and wheat. And that's a highly processed food now, and it's in everything, and it's been manipulated. It's not the wheat that our ancestors grew up with. And it has a tremendous amount more of gluten and gliadin in it than our ancestors grew up with. And so what's happening is you're seeing a lot more people who are gluten intolerant, gluten sensitive, or celiac, and mount an autoimmune response. So, you know, that's kind of where I stand on it. It's you know, It's a very difficult subject in this country.
It's difficult because there's the issue of identification and whether or not you can make a choice about it. And also the proponents say it enables us to feed millions more people.
Right. That's what the proponents say. And then I would say just from a, you know, isn't there another way that we could do that might be a way that is better for our bodies, and that's the big question. I mean, it's quite a conundrum. Mm-hmm.
Catherine, thanks for that call. We appreciate it. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm talking with Rebecca Katz, co-author of The Longevity Kitchen, satisfying big flavor recipes featuring the top 16 age-busting power foods. Back to those power foods. How did you get to the top 16? How did they get into that
ranking?
Well,
this is the story. There are 250 ingredients in this book,
mm-hmm.
and every single ingredient that I use, whether it's an herb or a spice or whatever ingredient I may be cooking with, is in itself a wonderful longevity food because I'm working with all of the vegetable, and I'm working primarily with the plant kingdom. And also some really wonderful other foods. So really, you could look at this book and pick your own top 16, depending on what your preference is. But my publisher came to me and said, out of all these ingredients, could you list 10 which you think are really the top? And I said, 10? Really? How about 16? Could you give me a little bit of room here? So this is how I came up with 16. One of the big things that I wanted to say is that when we're talking about longevity, we're really talking about, from a nutritional perspective, the word antioxidant, okay? And we hear that word bantied about a lot. High in antioxidants. Protects against free radicals. It's almost like wah, 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 wah. It's mm-hmm. like, what does that mean? So I wanted to give a visual for your listeners. Some people will say, you know, the older we get, we become like a car that ages and we get rust inside. And that's like free radical damage is the rust. And so we need to be protected. And that's where antioxidants come in. I like to say that if you are a cook and you cut an apple in half and you don't squeeze some lemon or some acid on it, it will turn brown. So that is kind of what happens as we age. We brown unless we bathe ourselves in some sort of protective juice, which is what antioxidants are. They protect our insides. It's like putting sunscreen on the insides of our bodies when we eat foods that are high in antioxidants. And antioxidants seem to appear in things like chocolate and coffee and sweet potatoes and asparagus and avocados and blueberries and herbs and spices like basil and mint and green tea and things like kale. And if you're not a kale eater, I would say anything from the cruciferous family like cabbage and broccoli and bok choy and cauliflower. And then olive oil has a tremendous amount of phytochemicals and pomegranates and sweet potatoes and thyme and walnuts and wild salmon and yogurt. Those are the 16. And, you know, notice that I don't have things on there like eye of newt or, you know, the wild goji berry from whatever.
In other words, these things are all very easy to get.
They're easy to get and they're familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because I just got sent a list of quote-unquote superfoods to comment on. And I have to tell you, Ann, I didn't know what any of them were. None of them were familiar to me.
Which is very off-putting. You know, I mean, at least a lot of people haven't had pomegranates, though.
Right. And pomegranates, I have to say, you know, they're an outlier for some people. And, you know, you can get pomegranates. You can find pomegranate juice or pomegranate molasses or pomegranates in the fall. They've been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
I love them because they are super, super high in antioxidants, and they're something a little bit different, but they've really proven themselves to be, you know, a longevity food from, you know, 10,000 years ago. So I look at foods also that have been around for a long time. So if you're looking for pomegranates, look for pomegranate juice, and it only takes a little. And you can do wonderful things with pomegranate juice or pomegranate molasses in your cooking because it's got that umami flavor to it, which is that kind
which is something we want. I wanted to ask you about, but first, yogurt. Yogurt is so gunked up these days. When you're talking about yogurt, what are you talking about?
Thank you for saying that, because yogurt has been totally gunked. I'm talking about plain yogurt. Plain, good old-fashioned yogurt. Greek yogurt is great because it's a little bit higher in protein, but plain yogurt. Not yogurt that's got all these emulsifiers in it and sugars and added sugars and everything else. I mean, plain old-fashioned yogurt. And that is if you don't have a problem with digesting lactose or dairy.
Right.
So, again, if you don't have problems with digesting dairy, then plain yogurt. You can always add a little bit of your own maple syrup, or you can always add a splash of vanilla or your own fruits. But I would stick to absolutely plain yogurt and do your own doctor, and you can put a little bit of cinnamon in it, other ways of making it a little bit sweeter, and use it as a dollop in your cooking. But stay away from the yogurts that have foods that you can't pronounce.
My guest is Rebecca Katz. We're talking about her new cookbook. It's called The Longevity Kitchen, Satisfying Big Flavor Recipes Featuring the Top 16 Age-Busting Power Foods. If you have a question or comment for Rebecca, we welcome them. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back. My guest is Rebecca Katz. She's the author of The Longevity Kitchen. If you have a question or comment for Rebecca, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You mentioned umami ingredients a minute ago. Tell us, that's really interesting. What are they and why do they matter?
Okay. Well, first of all, I have to say that great nutrition and great taste have to sit at the same sides of the table, right? If I just gave you a bowl of brown lentils and said to you, you know what, eat this, it's good for you, and you just looked at them and just were like, really? I don't think it would be very appetizing. So one of the big things about being a culinary translator is absolutely focusing on taste and flavor to make foods that we're familiar with taste really fantastic. And if foods taste really fantastic and you have that involuntary spasm of vocal delight, which is yum, then all of these wonderful foods become a natural part of your life. So, and to get there, I use a lot of different tricks. So umami is what's called, it's that elusive taste or sensation. It's, we call it the fifth taste, and it's in Japanese it means savory. So it has a savoriness to it, and it's often used to describe the weight or the gravity or the brothiness or the meatiness of that is lent to a dish. So here are some umami foods. We were talking about pomegranate, right? Mm-hmm. But some of them will be more familiar to you. Carrots are an umami food. Eggs are an umami food. Beef, green tea, scallops, red wine, potatoes, especially sweet potatoes, Parmesan cheese, tamari or soy sauce, tomatoes, especially tomato paste, and mushrooms. Shrimp is an umami food. Miso is an umami food. So there are lots of that. Those are the types of foods that kind of add that something to what you're eating. And ketchup, it's why people have a love affair with ketchup. Because it's tomatoes. It has that umami taste to it.
Yeah, I'm an umami girl. And I didn't know it existed before. But the whole idea, everything from carrots to miso to shrimp and red wine, you know, who isn't an umami person?
That's right.
You talk about balancing fat, acid, salt, and sweet. And we can remember that by saying the acronym FASS, FASS.
Right. And this is something I've been working on for a long time. It's basically, this is what I call the light side of FASS. When you're not working with processed foods and you're working with whole foods, you want to bring out their natural flavors. And I don't know if you've ever had this issue, but if you've ever followed a recipe from beginning to end and you get to the end and you taste it and you go, yikes. It's not what I expected, or it's not there, mm-hmm. or what am I doing wrong? Because it's not tasting the way I expect it to taste. I ask that question to people all the time. How many people have followed a recipe and gotten to the end and sort of been like, eh? And I think it's something that we all run into as cooks, because ingredients change. It depends on the time of the year. It depends on how a recipe is written. So if you understand that flavors have to be, that you have to taste, and that flavors have to be balanced, then you have more control of getting the yum back into your cooking. So for example, fat, good fats like olive oil, coconut oil, ghee, sesame oil, avocado, nuts, some organic butter, what it does is fat acts like a little taxi cab that distributes flavor across your taste buds. It stops. And it what it does is it makes us feel satiated. So when we use fat, like good olive oil, which is one of my top longevity foods, when you're cooking, it can also optimize the benefits of certain foods. For example, that broccoli that you're eating is actually more, all those phytonutrients that are so good for us are actually more absorbable if we drizzle some olive oil in it, on it, or if we saute our broccoli with a little bit of olive oil and maybe some garlic like the Italians do. So it can optimize some of the really good nutrients in food.
Like golden roasted cauliflower?
Like golden roasted cauliflower.
Which looks really good in this book.
Yes. So like if you toss, like, so here's a perfect example. People think about cauliflower, it's like, ugh, it's like, what do I do with that whole head of white, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but what if you just chopped it up into little florets, which takes no time, and you toss it with olive oil and a little bit of salt, and you used either some curry or some turmeric and maybe a pinch of red chili pepper flakes, and you toss it all together, and then you lie it out on a sheet pan, and you roast it in a 400-degree oven, and it becomes all kind of caramelized and brown. And you take it out, and it's golden, and it tastes like candy. Because anytime you roast a vegetable,
mm-hmm.
it's going to become sweet. And so that cauliflower that you thought was going to kind of be like, ooh, like the cauliflower that maybe you had growing up, which is like a little stinky or you didn't think much of or was boiled to death.
Mm-hmm.
But if you roast it until it's golden brown, it's like, ooh, it takes on a whole nother flavor.
And this recipe gives you choice. I mean, minced garlic, sea salt, turmeric, ground cumin, ground coriander, black pepper, freshly squeezed lemon juice, and finely chopped fresh parsley or cilantro. Sounds great.
Yeah. So that's a fun way to eat your vegetables.
Yes.
And every single one of those ingredients is doing something really powerful and wonderful for your body.
Well, here is Cy from Akron who wants to talk more about vegetables. Welcome to the show, Cy.
Hi. Thank you for being on. There was a National Geographic article that said that the tribes with the longest longevity, the most centenarians, were all vegetarians, and they included the Vilcabamba of Ecuador, the Hunzas, the Azerbaijans, some monks in India and Tibet. My question is, with the news that Brazil has joined the Netherlands, Switzerland, Japan, Canada, the U.S., and other countries with mad cow, do you recommend that people avoid meat as much as possible?
I recommend that that vegetables, that the plant kingdom dominate the plate. And if you're enjoy meat, that you buy the highest quality meat that you possibly can, preferably really grass-fed beef or organic chicken or wild salmon and sustainably raised seafood, and that it's more of a garnish. In other words, the Mediterraneans that have, you know, a tremendous longevity too, as well as the Japanese and some of the other others that you've mentioned, when they include animal protein in the diet, it's as a garnish. So it makes a small, it's a small amount. And when I say small amount, I mean no more than 4 ounces on the plate. And I also would say that everybody is a bit different. And so I'm not saying that, you know, I think there's what I call a bit of a flexitarian approach, because we all are very different. And some people do a little bit better with animal protein in their diet. But I really do think that quality animal protein, and I make a big point of this in my book, that is premier, and that it is the garnish, so that you can get as much plant food in your diet as possible.
Thank you, Cy, for that call. We appreciate it. Nasir in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning, Ann. How are you?
Very well.
This is Nasir from Lavash Cafe.
Hi.
This lady, she's calling all my recipes in the phone, in the radio. So I'm interested in that. It's very important. A lot of people didn't use the food the way they should be used. And if you play with the flavor, it turns out an excellent food. For example, the cauliflower, as she said, if she roasts it with olive oil and mix it with yogurt and let it boil for a few minutes, you get a cauliflower stew, which is my favorite in the restaurant. Cauliflower.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
And you saute it with garlic, fresh garlic, in the end, and you have a nice meal. So simple. And also, I want to emphasize about the yogurt. If people learn how to make yogurt from scratch, that's what we do in the restaurant too. So simple. By boiling the milk and let it cool down, and you can tell when you can add the yogurt to it. Touch it in your finger. If you can take that heat, you can add your yogurt and keep it in a warm temperature for a couple hours, 4 or 5 hours, and then you move it to the cooler. You have a fresh yogurt, nothing, no preservatives, nothing on it.
Hmm.
And that's the best way to make yogurt.
Do you make your own ghee?
Yes.
You know what? I packed my lunch today, but now I think I have to go to Lavash. So
it's funny because the yogurt, the pomegranate molasses, you can use it with roast eggplant, you know, like get some eggplant and roast them in the open fire and dice them and put some garlic, fresh garlic, and some pomegranate molasses, and you get yourself a wonderful, tasty salad. So simple.
Are you hungry yet, Anne?
I'm always hungry when I have these shows. I always have to make sure that I eat properly before I go on the air. Nasir.
Well, this is my first time caller. I'm trying to call to you, Anne, and get nervous. I think this lady, she need me.
Okay. Well, you did great, Nasir.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you for your guest. Thank you,
you
very
bet.
Much.
Let's see, a couple quick questions. One from Dave. He says, I am a coffee drinker, but what I really like is grinding hazelnut coffee beans. Now in time past, I've wondered about the health impact of the flavoring. It is infused into the actual beans rather than syrup or something added after the coffee is brewed. Could you comment?
I would say that, you know, if I can't comment, like, do I know for a fact that this is going to be, you know, good or bad or whatever? I can't really comment on that, but I'll just say this, everything in moderation, including moderation, enjoy your cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to bring that up earlier, too. You know, you hear about people pounding coffee all day long. That's not what you're talking about.
No, I'm really talking about everything in moderation, including moderation. I think we get nutritional analysis leads to culinary paralysis, and then we don't eat anything. So,
well, here's another coffee-related question. I think it's a good one. It's from Deborah on Facebook, and she wants to know if she can get the same benefit from decaf.
Yes, you can get the same benefits from decaf, provided that it's a good quality decaf. And,
okay.
And that's important because when they take the caffeine out, they go through a real, like, a process. So if you are buying decaffeinated coffee, you really want to buy a high-quality, fair trade, high-quality coffee.
An email from Steve. He says, I hear your guest talking about yogurt, but I was wondering if she knew anything about kefir milk.
Oh, kefir.
Kefir, and if it would be an acceptable substitute.
Absolutely. Kefir is wonderful. So kefir is basically, it's infused with the same probiotic cultures as yogurt. So yes, that would definitely be in the yogurt category.
Before we have to let you go, which I don't want to do, you write about our culinary GPS, and I wanted you to talk about that a little bit.
Oh, I'm so glad, because I think it's very important that if we're talking about sustainable nourishment, right, that we have to sort of find out what is our culinary GPS. Like, what are the things that we like and that we don't like? Because everybody is different. So everybody's top 16 foods may be a little bit different, depending on, you know, where you've come from, what kind of relationship you have with food, what your favorite foods are. Are you a crispy, crunchy person? Or are you a smooth and creamy person? What are your comforting food memories? Where do your ancestors come from? All of those things. I have a list.
Yeah, you have a questionnaire kind of.
I have a questionnaire. And really what I'm trying to get to is, you know, where do you fall? What is going to nourish you? What are the foods that are going to be your go-to foods? Because this is not a quote-unquote, you know, this is not a diet book. This is a book about cooking and finding, you know, where you can live and what foods are going to make you feel great and vital. And the best way to find that out is by asking yourself a few questions. So, yeah, this is about finding your own way to sustainable nourishment.
And we only have about 30 seconds, but how big of a deal is presentation to you?
Well, I think we eat with our eyes. So I think, you know, the choices that you make in terms of how you present your food and what color plate you put it on and taking time to savor your food, all of those things are all very important.
Well, Rebecca Katz, it's been a lot of fun talking with you today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
Rebecca Katz, she is the author, co-author with Matt Adelson of The Longevity Kitchen, satisfying big flavor recipes featuring the top 16 age-busting power foods. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.